Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey everybody, great news. We have a live show. It's at 10 p.m. at the Dynasty Typewriter on April 25th.
Yeah, we are going to be talking about Hollywood Forever and Paramount Studios.
Heard of it?
Double shot.
Woohoo!
So go to dynastytypewriter.com. You'll find it on there. We Rebecca also has the option. We're going to do a little ghost tour, a little
tour. For the VIP attendees.
I mean, everyone's a VIP, but if you want to be
VIP.
All right, we'll see you there. The Black Dahlia's final days. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
This is a biggie. This is a place that I feel very excited to talk about because it has an affiliation with one of my favorite LA unsolved murders. So today we're going to talk about the John Soden House, which is the Jaws House, the Franklin House, or perhaps the place that the Black Dahlia lived her final days and died.
I feel like the Black Dahlia is the, I feel like that's like a top 10.
Yeah. Quintessential, not even just LA murder, unsolved murder, but like our country, our history. I think people are really fascinated about it because it's a very big, like big dreams, you know, dash, young, beautiful woman's life cut short, who knows how.
Kind of a very extreme kind of, getting off the bus and I got big Hollywood dreams.
Exactly.
And this is like the biggest cautionary tale, I guess, of all of them.
Cautionary tale is a great way to put it because it is. It's like the dark side. And also the way that she was killed, which we'll talk about a little bit later too, is really brutal. So it's not even like she was killed or she went missing. It's like, no. We're going to take your body parts and chop them up and drain you and leave them naked for all to see in the middle of a park by USC.
Spoiler alert.
It doesn't
end well.
Yeah.
It does not end well.
Stay with us because we know you like things that don't end well.
Yeah. But you know what didn't end but is going well? We have a brand new $25 patron on our Patreon. Is that exciting?
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
You could be one too.
You could be one too. But right now, if you are Evita Acereto, you are that.
You're that one. Queen.
Now I asked Evita. I was like, hey, do you have like a website or something you want to mention?
Yeah.
Hint. This is a very, very cost efficient way to promote something.
Yeah.
Pending approval. But we're pretty chill. So when I asked Evita if she had any website she wanted to mention or anything, here is her response. Hi there. I don't have a website. But if you can mention in a future episode that I'm in full support of Rebecca speaking like a sailor, F-bombs included, I'd appreciate it. Love the content and keep up the great work, guys. Thank you, Evita.
Oh, my God. Yeah, fuck.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm crying.
Yeah, Evita paid for that.
Love you. Thank you so much
for Evita
supporting us.
She could have mentioned a charity website.
This is
website.
The best day of my life.
Yeah, yeah. Vita's cool. But if you, at our Patreon, we get two bonus episodes a month, that's like the $2 thing.
Yeah, that's nothing.
And then the $25 one, you get mentioned on an episode. So for every month that you do that, you'll get mentioned one episode a month.
Yeah.
That's pretty, like, if you understand, like, the price points of promotion on a podcast.
Yeah.
That is pretty almost free. But really, absolutely, we don't care because we just, you know, we need support to keep this running.
Exactly.
And we're happy to, you know, pending approval. But like we said before, we're pretty chill.
Yeah. So, I mean, Jason puts a lot of work into this podcast.
Yeah.
I kind of roll out of bed to the mic,
yeah,
and swear,
yeah, and then I'm just left holding the bag.
Exactly, you get to pick up the pieces.
Yes, which I do not mind doing. Also, we have a couple on our Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
We've been getting a lot of nice messages.
Oh,
and our Instagram is Ghost Town Pod.
I'm gonna pull
some up. We're gonna see what some people have to say.
Exactly. So if you leave a message, who knows? You might get famous.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but you'll definitely. Let's see what we got here. Well, you know, let's start with we got a tweet first.
Okay,
I'm gonna go with
okay,
the tweet
okay.
first. Why not? And our Twitter is also Ghost Town Pod. This is from Mikhail Takash.
Well, if it's not about my swearing, I don't want to hear it.
Well, let's see. At Ghost Town Pod, forever digging your broadcast with the added bonus of Rebecca's hashtag MKEisms.
Milwaukeeisms.
Okay,
yay!
That's
a,
okay.
Oh, is it, I wonder if he's a fellow Milwaukeean.
Okay, so P.S. that pornish Action Park background music brought back many VHS-flavored 80s memories. Hashtag podcast, hashtag podcast recommendations. So
that's
Rebecca's getting all the love.
I'm getting some traction.
Yeah, getting
me in Action Park.
Yeah,
I am Action Park.
Yeah,
no,
you
I'm
are.
Not. I'm not as dangerous.
Okay. Well, here's an Instagram message from Juanma Bermudez. We get into it, and he says, "Love the episode, the black metal episode, which
hell
is
yeah.
the." And then he says, I love that you made your episodes longer. Now my ride to school doesn't suck that much.
Hey!
And the fact that we're talking about your message on Instagram has made the episode longer.
Longer.
You see how
we
did
work
that?
For you yeah. and you work for us.
Yeah. Do you see how that happened?
Symbiotic.
Yeah.
Beautiful relationship.
Yeah. And everything's going well with you, Rebecca?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm working hard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still going on dates, which is a hellscape.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I work on the show right now called Brain Games, and there'll be more. I can't talk about it too much yet. But it was a show on Nat Geo from 2013 to 2016. And we're rebooting it, and it's going to be really fun. I'm working a lot on that. And doing this. These
yeah.
are my jobs.
Yeah, this is, you know what I mean? You have two children. One is freaking gorgeous,
mm-hmm.
and one is Nubbins. Ghost Town Podcast.
And Nubbins.
One is Ghost Town Podcast.
Yeah, yeah. One of them pays me a living wage.
Yeah, one
other,
costs money.
Yeah, the other is
it's just siphoning money.
You see it. We are still using a microphone that
yeah.
sits on five coasters.
Yes.
So again, another reason to help support us. We put a lot of work into this. Don't you want me to quit all my jobs but this?
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, I do too. Make
right?
it a lot easier to communicate with you. It'd be a lot easier to do this. I probably just sit with my stuff like outside your door just in case you have a minute to podcast. Can you spare a second to podcast, Rebecca?
People also don't realize too that I work freelance on TV shows, and it's like a good, it's usually like a 3 month chunk of time that is insane. And then I'm freaking out because I'm not employed.
Yeah.
So we're in that time where I am employed and freaking out for that reason, and soon that will be not the case.
Yeah.
So the circle of life.
And like we mentioned in the beginning, we have a live show coming up that we're trying to
you do.
Very excited about our very first live show. You go to dynastytypewriter.com if you
uh-huh.
want to check it out. We mentioned in the beginning, we don't have to get too much into
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and again, if you want to support us, you already donated to the Patreon, mm-hmm. you can just buy a ticket.
Yeah. Oh, you mean just buy a ticket and not go?
Why
as like
not?
A donation?
How,
yeah.
How punk is that?
Oh, that's
just
crazy.
Like, right?
That's like
that
anti-establishment.
I know. It's like, hey, how about this?
Yeah.
You're never going to see me, but I am here.
Yeah.
Like an invisible benefactor.
I think that's what like 50 Cent did too. there was a Ja Rule where he bought out the front rows of his concert.
Oh my
just
God.
Just so no
for
one
real?
Would be there. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's
that,
a true thing.
Weird. I hope it's true.
Yeah.
But what a weird thing to do. Also, it's like when you gaze down upon the front row of your own concert,
yeah.
you want to see nobody.
Yeah. Although I just run to the front for Ja Rule.
For Ja Rule.
Firefest John Ja Rule. I call him John Rule, but maybe
John,
this is his name.
John,
John Rule.
John Rule is my tax accountant.
Yeah, yeah. No one calls me John Rule except the IRS.
Yeah, exactly. Hey.
But Rule is really your last name? He's like, yeah. He's like, wow, okay. That's pretty cool.
Great. Hey.
But yeah, I loved you in the Firefest
documentary. Both Firefest documentaries. Yeah. Thank you so much.
So that's a little 50 Cent ism that I try to work in every episode.
Inside baseball. Yeah. 50 Cent lovers only.
But I mean, you know, so that's a Hollywood tale. But
that's a Hollywood tale. But let's circle back to the Hollywood tale that I teased in the beginning.
I believe you do on your walking tours. The Black Dahlia, do you work that in there? I feel like you've mentioned it.
Downtown. Yeah. Downtown, the Biltmore it's a hotel downtown. It's the last place that she was ever seen. It's really beautiful. The architecture is incredible. It has been kind of the crown jewel of hotels downtown, which was the hub of the finance district and all of the like attorneys. Like it for so long, downtown was an actual downtown, I guess I could say. So you go into the Biltmore.
Downtown was like an uptown.
Yeah.
Like in a way, if you like think of it like that.
That's true.
It's like it's uptown, baby.
Exactly.
You know?
Just people lived there and worked there. And now that's not untrue, but LA is sprawling, as you all listening probably know. But you can go to the Biltmore. You can get a drink called the Black Dahlia, which I've made before, which maybe I'll put the recipe up on our Instagram because it's really boozy and very fun. But you can walk through the doors where the last place she was ever seen, which is pretty eerie and haunting. But I want to get back to the John Soden house because I think this house is also really fascinating in lots of different ways, but also including the Black Dahlia. It's got so much to it. And you're like, okay, how does this exist? It's just chock full of history, baby. So I visited this house and this is a story in and of itself. I was in one of those underemployed moments /unemployed. And my friend Jesse Birschbach was like, I am catering an event at the Soden house. And I was like, amazing. That's like, I thought she was just going to talk to me about it. And she's like, I want you to help me. And I was like, first of all, I've never worked in the food industry at all. I have no experience with that. I don't know. Sanitation eludes me a lot of the time. So it's not an ideal fit. But she knew that I was pretty obsessed with the Black Dahlia and that I wanted to be there. So I went there, did my first and only catering job. I wore black pants and a white shirt, classic. And I got to experience this amazing home, which we'll put lots of Instagram pictures up because you can't even, it is like nothing you've ever seen. It's structurally very interesting. There's this middle walkway. It's like a fortress from the bottom. It's in Los Feliz too. So it's in Franklin up on the hills. There are 7 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms. It's 5,600 square feet.
You only have 6 bedrooms, just to let you know that,
I know,
how big this is.
And no bathrooms.
Yeah.
4 kitchens. Yeah. So I was confused, to say the least. But you go in there and you can see the sun setting and rising. And it's called the Jaws House or the Franklin House because it's on Franklin. But the Jaws House because it's like Jaws. It looks like the top of a shark's head coming down onto the residence. It's got this really ominous look, and we'll talk a little bit more about
the shark from Jaws didn't live there.
No, just we're debunking that myth. Yeah. Right here.
Yeah,
you're, he did not live. He lived in Wilton. Yeah. So like, yeah. Go elsewhere. Yeah. Take a turn. So it was built in 1926 in Los Feliz, California, by Lloyd Wright, son of Frank Lloyd Wright, trying to step out of his father's shadow, right? And it's all of these textiled cement blocks everywhere. So it looks very like a Mayan temple, like Legends of the Hidden Temple for the younger people listening on their way to school, perhaps. Yeah. And again, it's got that great white shark opening. It doesn't feel like it belongs anywhere architecturally and everywhere. It's really, really cool. It's used in Scorsese's The Aviator. It was on season 6 of America's Next Top Model. It's in Ghost Hunter, I Am the Night, all that stuff, mostly because of the Black Dahlia stuff, but also because it's such an iconic piece.
Maybe sometime in the future, people will be like, it was on Ghost Town Podcast.
Yeah,
imagine
that's
that.
Right.
Right
Soden
after.
Soden House, can you imagine?
Right after America's Top Model.
Season 6.
Season 6, yeah.
Not a great season, yeah. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So the original owner, John Soden, was a painter and photographer who hired his friend, Lloyd Wright, again, son of Frank Lloyd Wright, to build him a home for him and his wife to retire in. The style is similar to houses designed by Frank Lloyd Wright, which is weird because, again, his son was always trying to not be his dad,
but it looks a lot like the Ennis House and the Hollyhock House. It's got a Frank Lloyd Wright flair for sure. Like everything, like in a Frank Lloyd Wright house, everything has a place. The furniture is designed with the house in mind. It's like, if humans didn't live there, he'd be okay with it because it's supposed to be perfect and pristine and everything in accordance with everything
else. And there's a lot of them in this area.
Yes, there's a lot of them here in the Midwest where he worked for a really long time. Not so many on the East Coast, but yeah, here you can see them, you can tour them. Most of them are in really good condition, so including this house, which people live in it, which we'll get to as well. So the house is got these Mayan themes, dark block work. It's got this cave-like front entrance where you go up this like tomb-like staircase. It's just very rectangular. You don't know where the house, like a lot of houses, there's a center, right? There's a dining room, living room, and everyone in the
there's
bedrooms
a heart,
are
the heart.
Yeah, bedrooms are like on the side of it. This, it's got these line of bedrooms. There's kind of a kitchen in the front. There's something in the back. So every part of the house feels like it's not the center, and it is the center. Very disorienting too. So people hated at the time in the mid-20s, the Mayan revival residences. They said that concrete was cheap, it was ugly, that like it was generally like lame and like kind of performative. But now they're some of the most famous places in the area and are thought that if they aren't preserved well, that they erode really poorly. So it's one of the most important works of Lloyd Wright, for sure. When he died in 1978, the Los Angeles Times wrote that the house should be hailed as the apogee of his residential work. It, again, looks like it's being eaten and submerged by a shark. It has a culty brooding appearance to it. The LA Times has additionally described it as quasi-Mayan-style mansion, an otherworldly apparition that looms over Franklin Avenue in Los Feliz and challenges the street.
I mean, that's like the...
My apartment doesn't know that.
No.
My shitty one-bedroom.
You've got hardwood floors.
Yeah, but they're painted over in this like strange... We don't have to... You guys don't care about my floors, yeah. Do you? Do you?
Yeah. Do you? No, seriously, do you?
Answer me. Yeah. They're not answering me. So he wanted a house that he could entertain his friends in the Hollywood film community. Again, he was a well-regarded artist, but he only lived there for a few years mostly, and this is what people say, because he didn't like all of the architectural criticism of it at the time. Like, he felt like it wasn't cool if he lived there. So in 1930, it was sold to Ruth Rand Barnett, and it's had 10 owners in all. But the most notable owner, and this is how we get to the Black Dahlia, is from 1945 to 1950, it was owned by Dr. George Hodel, a Los Angeles physician who is the prime suspect in the Black Dahlia murder. Again, he has not been charged. He's long dead. Still unsolved. The oldest cold case in California. But we think most likely that it's this doctor that killed her in this house. So here's a little bit about the Black Dahlia.
Is that a popular... Because you know better than me. Is this like the number one working theory?
Yes. And for a while, they thought it was police. They thought it was someone that she had worked with on some film or something like that. The problem really with this case is that we don't know a lot about her. So we don't know what she was into. People have theorized about her life a lot in a lot of really inaccurate ways, too, in kind of sensationalized ways. There are only like 5 photos of her ever. And every other photo of that is essentially of her body that's been dismembered.
I mean,
in a
compare
park.
That to like, you know, if you were to look at any case now, you go on someone's Instagram and there's 5,000 photos.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
So we have so much content now. Yeah. It's so hard to believe that in the 20s that wouldn't be the thing. But yeah. I mean, because I was so, when I first moved out to LA, first of all, I hated LA. Crazy how far we've come.
Yeah.
But I was pretty obsessed with this murder, and I would try to look up like pictures of there's different places where I haven't looked yet. And there's not many. There's one of her on a beach with a friend when she was a teenager. There's this kind of headshot one, which is probably the most popular one, where her hair is really curled and she's got this like cute smile. There are a picture of her with like a dude in downtown LA. And there's one other one of just like her.
Do you think, and this is, I mean, I guess for anyone listening and you, do you think the fact that it was, you know, called the Black Dahlia murder helps, you know, kind of make it sensationalizes kind of the thing? Because when you give something a name, I feel like sometimes it's kind of like the
Black
Dahlia.
It's very catchy.
You know, if it was just like, the murder of Beth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's like, short. Cool. Yeah. Like a 20-year-old. You know, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And this was, I mean, I think it would have been sensationalized anyway. This name, her name was based on the Blue Dahlia, which was a Lucille Ball movie that came out around that time. So they were like, Blue Dahlia. And she, and Lucille Ball was very glamorous in this movie. I've actually never seen it, but she kind of has a resemblance to her in a weird way, at least like the way she styles herself. So, and her hair was really dark, which they're not sure if that's her natural hair color, if she like did a bunch of, there's also a lot of theories about her doing a lot of surgeries and stuff for things. I don't think that's the case, but she has this like very dark raven hair that's like kind of tightly curled. And so they're like, great, the Black Dahlia.
As opposed to being blonde and making it like
the blonde
it's a,
Dahlia,
it's a lot lighter when
the
it's
strawberry
the black Dahlia.
Blonde Dahlia.
Yeah,
who cares?
Yeah, the yeah. What is that? What is what do you call when the hair is? When people do that, their hair. I'm trying to think of the word.
Perm?
No, it's a coloring. It's
ombre.
Ombre. Yeah.
the ombre, the beachy waved ombre Dahlia.
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
cares? Yeah. Get out of here.
But I think that I don't know. It's like black darkness is
yeah.
makes it more like this
sinister.
Is immediately sinister. Yeah.
Absolutely. So all of that contributed to that. But let me give you a little. I'm sure. Gosh, our listeners are probably pretty familiar with the Black Dahlia. But I'm going to give us a little review for those who aren't. So her killer was never found. Murder is one of the oldest cold case files in LA, definitely the most famous. I think I said California before. It's LA. So she was born Elizabeth Short in Boston, Massachusetts on July 29th, 1924. She loved cinema. By her teens, she had set her sights on becoming a famous Hollywood actress. In the mid-1940s, she was living in Los Angeles, California, working as a like maybe a waitress. People have said that she was a prostitute. People have said that she didn't have a job. She was like sleeping on couches and going on dates to get meals from dudes. We have that in common, you know?
Yeah, we do.
Me and the Black Dahlia.
Oh, okay. How do you know? How do you know?
I don't know.
You don't know.
Right. I don't know.
I'm
you.
I'm hungry.
I don't know you at all.
I'm always hungry.
So she was dreaming of catching her big break, hence the reason why the story is so iconic. In January 1947, when she was 22, she was brutally murdered. Her body was cut into pieces, severely mutilated. She had a lot of, like, you've probably seen this picture. Because the police photos are out there, too. And when I'm talking about her photos that I've found of her alive, I don't mean those. It's like her mouth is like Joker-esque. People have cut a smile into it. Her abdomen is cut into too, and her legs, which are cut off entirely. So she was slashed up real bad. Her body was found nude and posed by, I believe it was a woman and her infant who were taking a walk in this park, which is also like pretty messed up. Right in Lemert Park outside of USC, essentially. So this became like just a media frenzy. And oh, sorry. They identified her via her fingerprints, which she was linked to a previous arrest for underage drinking because she was only 22. She was a little baby. The coroner determined that she died of hemorrhage and shock from concussion and facial lacerations. After speaking with Short's friends and acquaintances, the LAPD realized that she'd vanished 6 days before her murder and kind of led investigators to think that she was kidnapped or had tried to go somewhere and was stopped. So the media caught wind of it, the moniker Black Dahlia, so heavily used. And then the case kind of took on a life of its own. One of the LAPD officers said that early on, I think for 2 months, it was front page news in all the local papers every day. So if that gives you an idea. So an in-depth, lengthy investigation by the LAPD ensued, leading a number of false reports, lots of false murder confessions, obviously with such a high-profile case, and people just couldn't find anything. The sole witness of the murder, the body had reported seeing a black sedan parked in the area in the early morning hours, but couldn't give any more information aside from that. So the combination of witnesses, not a lot of hard evidence surrounding the case hindered its progress. And then because there's a lot of different false, allegations and things, it kind of went dead. But in 2013, an article in the San Bernardino Sun detailed a more recent investigation of the case by retired police sergeant Paul Dosti, homicide detective and author Steve Hodell, and a police dog named Buster, who has a keen sense of smell, which gave the case new life. So the dog was kind of trained to hunt down, like find like weird places, especially decomposing flesh in specific places around murder sites. So the the investigative team had uncovered incriminating evidence against Hodel's father, Dr. George Hill Hodel, who the younger Hodel had long believed to be the Black Dahlia killer. So, Revival, 2013, it all happened. But let's backtrack a little bit to 2001, where it was purchased by Zorin Balbus for $1.2 million. So again, we're getting back to the house itself, away from Black Dahlia.
But not too far away.
Not too far away. We're going to go back to 2013, talk about that dog who is smelling flesh. So when Balbus bought the house, he said it was a wreck. He spent $1.6 million on restorations. He was really vocal about this too. He was like, this house is shit. I'm spending all this money, just saying. LA hates its history and doesn't like preserving it. And then the way he renovated it, like all of the preservationists were like, you didn't do this right, whatever. But if you go to the house, like I did, it's still really beautiful. Anyway, Steve Hodel, son of Dr. Hill Hodel, wrote a book in 2003 called The Black Dahlia Avenger, which stated that the short was actually tortured, murdered, and dissected by his father in the basement of the Soden house in January 1947. So he's like been saying this for a long time. But once that article happened, and they got the dog on the site of the house, that kind of, again, made media a little more interested in the case that had been long cold. So Hodel claims that his father may have committed further murders in the house and buried victims in the basement or yard before fleeing the country in 1950. And he died in the 80s, I believe. So he's not around to state his case or anything like that. So in February 2013, the team conducted an extensive search of the doctor's home, where Buster, flesh-smelling dog, had previously detected the scent of human decomposition in several areas of the basement, according to reports. Soil samples were taken from Dr. Hodel's home and were submitted for lab testing. Other evidence against George Hodel, according to his son, includes an old recording of a conversation between the doctor and an unknown person, during which Dr. Hodel allegedly stated, supposin', with an apostrophe, no G, that I did kill the Black Dahlia. They couldn't prove it now. They can't talk to my secretary because she's dead. Oh, pretty damning evidence, I would say. So the dogs were in the house. They brought these soil samples, but they've never excavated anything around this house, which is also this double-edged sword of being this historical, like really important architectural home. It's like they can't dig up too much. So what do you do if you think you have human remains in a place that's historically preserved? Apparently, the answer is you just don't dig those up. You just let sleeping dogs lay. The house has sold several times since, and on September 10th, 2016, it was listed for sale at almost $5 million and sold to Dan Goldfarb and his wife Jenny and their Persian cats that they were obsessed with, and used as a part-time home, part-time like social performance venue. Apparently they do, well, Goldfarb had never been to LA and made a fortune with natural hemp pet products called Canapet.
Oh.
Right? And yeah, they do a lot of hemp products there.
Legalize it, baby. Poor yeah, cats.
Exactly, exactly. So now it's owned by that guy. That's how I got involved with it, doing my first and last catering gig at this house.
Wow, so that's... So the Black Dahlia, that might be like where it went down.
Yeah, that's like the best theory we have.
Yeah. And, you know, between the Biltmore, that house, and USC, it's not mm-hmm. that far, but it's not across the street.
No. I mean, I am, where we are recording this right now is about a mile and a half from downtown. It's about 2 miles from USC and about 3 miles from LeMaire Park. Yeah. So we're close.
We're in it. We're in it.
We're in the backyard.
When we do these episodes, we're doing it in a very, like, kind of a historic kind of, I don't know.
Way?
Yeah, like in the, we're in it. We're up in it.
We are up in it.
We're not like in Beverly Hills in a mansion.
No.
Baby.
No, although there's some murders there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We got murders everywhere.
Yeah.
We can't hide from it.
No, but
we are it. We live it.
I feel like this area is definitely an area where a lot of stuff has gone down over the years. Not just, over the years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Where I live, we talked about this before. It's Angelino Heights. It's one of the oldest parts of LA. We've got the Thriller home here. Fast and the Furious, Chinatown, Charmed, the TV series, not the reboot.
Ghost Town Podcast. The Home.
No, exactly. All the hits.
Yeah. So And our live show is going to be pretty close at the Dynasty Typewriter. It's close to MacArthur Park, which has its own.
Absolutely.
That's an episode I've been kind of
mulling around.
Yeah. What's the angle, though? You know what I mean? I want to know what the.
Yeah, we've got to find the place. Actually, we should maybe do one on the Hayworth Theater.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Since we're doing the show at the Hayworth Dynasty Typewriter.
That seems.
April 25th.
That's right.
10 p.m.
Find tickets at dynastytypewriter.com.
Yeah. We will definitely see every single one of you there. Right?
I know what you look like.